Hi everyone, welcome to the first episode of the Wealthy Mind Podcast. I'm super excited to welcome Bashar Kattu today. Bashar had such an inspiring journey, it's insane. I've seen you, like I think we met when you're doing around 50 to 100 grand a month in your business, and I've seen him go from 50 to 100 grand a month, like low seven figures, high six figures, to like rocket up within like a couple years or like a year even to like eight figures. So Bashar runs his own Amazon FBA business, but he has an education side to it where he helps regular everyday people gain lives and gain freedom from their corporate shackles by starting up their own Amazon FBA businesses. So Bashar, thank you so much for driving all the way from Miami to Fort Lauderdale. I'm super excited to have you here today.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you. So as many of you guys can probably see, this is our very first episode, so I'm super excited to have Bashar on as the first guest. But what I just initially want to ask you is, like, why did you get started off with entrepreneurship? Like, what made you become an entrepreneur?
My first inspiration was my father. So he was like the person who was my role model, like first role model. Mm-hmm. So he was a successful entrepreneur back home in Iraq. He owned the second largest clothing factory in Iraq. And when I was little, the way that I would imagine him, or the way that I would like look, kind of like envision him in my mind, it was always like he was a mover, he was a shaker, he was someone that the community respected. And people came to him for advice. And mm-hmm. that really, like, it felt really good to see someone so close to me that I can, like, look up to and, like, touch and feel. And that felt good. And so for the longest time, I just wanted to be like my dad. Yeah.
That's amazing. I wish I could say the same. Dad, if you're watching this, I apologize. So you looked at your dad, and that's who you wanted to be like. What was your first, like, entry into entrepreneurship? Because I know it was in this education business, and I obviously know the answer, but I want to hear from the horse's mouth.
So that's a good question. No one has actually asked me that before. Okay, got to do some thinking about that. Well, first of all, when I came to America, so this was in 2006, and prior to that, so I was 16 years old when we migrated to the US, and prior to that, I don't think I had like a thought of entrepreneurship in mind, but I did know that I was destined for something big in life. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how. Like, I could have become an astronaut. I could have become a doctor. I could have become anything. It wasn't like entrepreneurship, you know? I just know that like my father was like a role model, but I don't think necessarily, you know, like in my early teens, I thought of like, I want to become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. It was more of like, I just knew deep down that I was going to do something big. I didn't know what it was. But after I came to the US and kind of like the door of opportunities opened up, the very first thing was my mom convinced me to be a doctor. And so I started going to school, started studying biochem, and like a few months into it, I was like, dude, this is not me. You know, I don't know what the hell I'm doing right now. I still remember I would be sitting at the library and like a fly would go by a mile away and I would just like turn around. And then for the longest time, I thought I really had a problem with focusing. Mm. And then for the longest time, I also used to call myself a procrastinator because I would literally not do my homework until the night before. Mm-hmm. And I would always be like, why am I doing this? Why am I up until 1 o'clock in the morning doing homework where, you know, I got the homework assignment like 2 weeks ago, you know? Right. But it wasn't that I was uninspired or that I was procrastinator. I was just uninspired because the thing that I was doing was not inspiring me. And that's the reason why a lot of times now when I see people putting labels on themselves or putting labels on other people, I always am very cautious with that because you have to really look at the entire situation and figure out what is going on and why you're not getting the result that you want. Because it's very... Oftentimes, it has to do with the thing that's not interesting to you. It's not the fact that you're lazy or you're a procrastinator or you're this or you're that.
Right.
So after I came to America is when I really realized that, okay, there are so many things that I can do. Mm-hmm. I think it was around 2008, so I was about 18 years old now. My father was about to be coming to the U.S. because he came a few years after we came to America. And he was like, hey, what can we do there as a business? Like, he didn't speak the language, nothing. I mean, I didn't. Right. I was only just a couple of years ahead of him here. And I started looking into, like, franchise opportunities. And I still remember I would, like, drive around, and I would, like, have a notebook next to me, and I would write down anything that I could see, like a McDonald's, a Subway, whatever. And one time I even went to a 7-Eleven, like, franchise seminar or something like that. There was, like, 30 people in there. I was 17 or 18.
Yeah.
Everyone was, like, 40 years old or whatever. And the facilitator came to me and was like, how old are you? I'm, like, 18. He's like, you do realize that you can't open a 7-Eleven unless you're 21, right? I was like, oh, shit. Okay. I didn't know that. But that's when I started getting a taste of, like, what entrepreneurship would look like and started actually becoming very interested. I was around, like, 18 years old or so.
Got it. Yeah. So how did you go from that to, like, your first business?
Yeah. So for the first, like, 15, 16 years of my life, we looked very wealthy on the outside, but we were cash poor. Because my father, so again, my dad in like the 80s, early 90s, it was probably worth like tens of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Gulf War on Iraq happened in 91.
Yep.
And the Iraqi dinar went from like one dinar equaling $3 to one US dollar equaling 1,200 dinars. So my dad's net worth literally went from like tens of millions to zero overnight.
Damn.
And so his business shut down. And for like 10 years, we had no cash flowing business. It was just, he had properties, he had acquired properties because he had wealth and he had bought things. We had a very nice home, he had buildings in like downtown Baghdad, but we didn't have a cash flowing business. And for like 10 years, we were just like living hand to mouth, you know? And I remember one time I was in school and a friend of mine asked me, I don't know, it was so random. He asked me, he's like, are you guys rich? And like, we were in like elementary school.
Yeah.
And I couldn't answer him because I was very confused. I'm like, are we or are we not? Because it looks like we are, but I only bought new clothes on Christmas.
Yeah.
I had a very tight budget that I could like buy just like a shirt, pants, shoes, that's it.
Yeah.
It was just from Christmas to Christmas. I didn't have like an allowance. My mom used to always complain because she didn't have enough money to buy like enough groceries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And things seemed to be tight. And I'm like, but we have this big ass house. And then we have all these things. And I'm like, okay, I'm a little confused. And I remember going to my dad and asking him, I'm like, Dad, I got asked that at school, are we rich? Yeah. And I remember him looking at me and I could see the disappointment on his face.
Mm.
Because again, he was like the guy that everyone went to, you know? Mm-hmm. He's built his brothers like houses, put all of his, you know, kid brothers in school, like all that stuff, you know what I mean? And now he can't provide. So I could like really see it on him, you know? After the war in Iraq, everyone was thinking that everything's going to be great. And then things really went to shit for the first 5-6 years. Finally, he was able to liquidate some of his properties and get some money. And this was about 2008. So I was about 18, 19 years old.
Yep.
And that's when he came to America. So he brought some money with him. And we decided to start a family business.
Okay.
So that's when we bought a pizzeria. Mm. It was a local shop, like a, you know, like takeout and stuff like that. My dad at the time was in his 70s. My mom was like 65, 66, 60, no, more like 62, 61, 62. My dad was probably like 72, 73. And then it was my brother and I. And we were working 24-7, well, not 24-7, you know, 80 hours a week, 7 days a week, open, close. And this was the first time in my life that I actually worked that much. But now I had a business that I can control. Mm. And this was my first taste to my own business. And I was 20 at the time. So this was 2000.
Got it. So you and your family decided to start up like a restaurant business.
Right.
So, because when we were speaking, I remember you talking about how like you were learning to like grow a restaurant business. And it just, like, I actually love that story about how you were watching TV shows instead of seeking mentors.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we were about a year into the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I was trying to go out at 120 miles an hour. My brother was trying to go out at like 2 miles an hour.
Right.
We had the same vision, and our vision was, okay, we like this business. It's cool. I've only ran, up until that point, I had only worked at restaurants. I had, my first job in America was at McDonald's in Detroit. And then when we moved to San Diego, I worked at another McDonald's with my mom. And then I worked at a Greek restaurant for 3 years. And then our pizzeria. Right. So that's all I knew. And I was like, you know, I like it. I like food and stuff like that. That's cool. So our plan was we're going to buy up a few different shops, and then we're going to kind of like get ideas, create like a uniformed like theme or a uniformed like concept,
yeah.
and then kind of like make a chain. And then over time, after we open like 20, 30 like corporate places, then start franchising them. So this was the idea. That's what we wanted to do.
Right.
But I was ready to buy our second one by like month 8, 9. My brother wanted to wait. And then now we're a year in. I'm like, hey, bro, like I'm bringing all these places. I'm talking to realtors. I'm going checking out new places. I'm 20 years old at this time. And he's like, well, let's wait a little bit, this and that. And at this point, he's the oldest here. My parents are relying on him. Everything's under his name. So he kind of has everything in control. Mm-hmm. And I have zero control. And then we started butting heads a lot. So that's when I was like, all right, guys, I'm out of here. You guys could do you. I'm just not. I want to explode. I don't want to do all these things. But you guys don't want to evolve or don't want to do anything. Like, that's not what I want to do, you know? At that point, again, my dad had liquidated some more properties. To that point, I was born in 1990.
Yep.
My older brother was born in 81. 9 years apart. My sister, 72. My oldest brother, 67. So there's 30 years between me and my oldest brother.
Right.
All the older ones were born into wealth when my dad had it all.
Interesting.
I was the only kid that was born when shit really just hit the fan. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like, I haven't confirmed this, but I feel like my dad felt obligated to provide me the kind of life that he provided to my other siblings.
Right.
So when this whole thing happened, he transferred $200,000 into my bank account, and he said, this is your college fund. Your mom wants you to become a doctor. You want to become an entrepreneur? Do whatever you want. I trust you.
He just sent you 200 grand.
He just sent me 200 grand. And this was the last $200,000 he had.
Got
as
it.
A, like, as a family, we had the business that was generating like 7-8 grand a month.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't really spending a whole, like, we were saving $3,000-$4,000 a month from that business after all of our expenses. But this was the last one he had. He sent it over to me. He said, do you?
Damn.
You know, I trust you. And I was like, all right, I'm
How old were you at that time?
23. 23.
Imagine being 22, 23, and just your dad just being like, yo, here's 200 grand.
Yeah.
Make sure you use it to go to college.
Yeah. Well, he said, do whatever you want. He said, either become an entrepreneur or go to college, right? And become a doctor like your mom wants you to do. And I had a decision to make, man. And it was just not school. I changed my major like 6 times in like a 2-3 month period.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't find something that I can resonate with, but it wasn't that. I was uninspired. And that's when I decided to go into, hey, I know restaurants. I'm going to go into restaurants. I was like, if I could eat, party, drink, I was 23. I was going out all the time. And make money at the same place? Like, holy shit. Hell yeah. This is like, that's all I need, right? So I found a place that had like a big opening so I can do like a dance floor and stuff like that. And rundown restaurant. It used to be called the 67 Bar and Grill. It was on the 67 freeway. And that thing was run down. I mean, that thing was run down. So we bought it. I bought it for $200,000 cash. I transferred the whole thing. Now,
really?
Looking back at it, that thing was not worth more than $50,000-$75,000. But the way that I was thinking was not what it's worth today, what it could be in the future.
Right.
And that's why I went all in. Again, 23-year-old kid, didn't know anything, what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
I had been watching John Taffer, Bar Rescue, for about 6 months. Taking notes. Every time I watch, I take notes. I'm like, all right, so this is what he does. He brings a mixologist. He brings a chef into the kitchen. He does
Wait,
this.
Wait, so that place had a liquor license and everything?
Yeah, no, it was a bar. It was a running restaurant. It was restaurant and bar. Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's that just the liquor license was worth about $85,000 that time in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
But how much it was generating, you wouldn't buy that place for more than $50,000-$75,000. Right.
Makes sense.
So I was like, all right, you know, that's fine. I'm probably overpaying by $50,000-$75,000. That's cool. I know the potential.
Right.
You know, and I've got the knowledge that I can implement here to get it to where it needs to go. But I was very wrong.
So what I don't know if you told me this or I was reading one of your emails that you sent out, but I think this brings us to the importance of proper mentorship.
Mm.
So what was your attitude towards getting mentors and paying for mentors? Because I know it's radically different now.
Well, first, I don't think I knew about the term mentors, you know, or I understood what that meant. At the time, what I probably knew was consultants, right? And you couldn't tell me what to do because I knew it all.
Ah.
Because in my mind, it's like, look, you're able to figure this thing out and come charge me money. If you're able to do it, I'm able to do it. Because in my mind, I'm smart. I'm a genius, right? If anyone on planet Earth can figure it out, I can figure it out.
Mm.
Why the hell am I going to come and pay you money? And instead of me paying you money, I can put that money back in my pocket and I can invest it in blah, 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 blah.
Right? More tangible, things I can hold and feel.
And that's the thing that I see with people. And you know, although that restaurant failed miserably, it took me a while after to finally make that switch in my mind. And I know we were talking off camera, like the mindset shifts. Like this was one of the, probably the biggest things until today. And sometimes I find myself also struggling and it's like, hang on a second, what are you doing? No. We know what happened when you were thinking this way.
Yeah.
We know how where we went when we were thinking the other way. This is the way to do it, right? And it simply was about making the shift from I'm here to pay you to why am I going to pay you to give me something that I can go learn on by myself?
Yeah.
To no, you've done it before. You've gone through the trial and error. I would rather pay you to accelerate the learning curve. It's like reading a book.
Mm.
The author has gone through a decade or decades of their life, and they're literally putting it in a book that you can buy for $10 or less. And I don't know. I mean, it depends on how fast you read. You could read it an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 hours. A decade and 5 hours, like, that's a good deal, right? So for me, I didn't understand that. And there are, until today, there are so many things that happen that I have a mindset shift. And then when I look back, because when you don't have that mindset shift, where you're sitting, you feel like this is the right thing, right? And then when you make the mindset shift, you look back and you're like, wait a second, how the hell did I think that was right? But I believe it's all about awareness. That's where it all lies, right?
Yeah.
It's about awareness. How much awareness do you have? Like the reason why you're here and not here, it's just your level of awareness. That's all it is. And usually it's 80% psychology, 20% skill, right? And so this is the thing that I really realized, like right now, especially over the last 12 years, I've been obsessed over skill, just skill building, you know, learning how to do this, learning how to do that, learning how to do that. But then just recently, like within the last 6 months, I realized that it's really 80% psychology and 20% skill. And that's when I started working more on my psychology than the actual skill that I have. And so going back to your question, no one could tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it all. I had all the answers. I had a plan. I just had a plan until I did it.
Okay. So how much did you invest in your personal growth, in your psychology this year?
Well, total, I mean, psychology, you could say about maybe like 250, between 220 to 250K.
Damn.
In terms of entire investment, we're at a little over 610,000 this year.
So you went from 20-year-old Bashar believing he could do it all on his own. Why pay you to give me, to make me learn skills when I could learn it myself and then put this money back in my pocket to 600 grand this year?
Yeah.
And 20-year-old Bashar, Mr. Know-it-all, making nothing. 30-year-old Bashar, 2 million a month. Openly investing, humble. So, I mean, that's like, I think that's one of the tenets of like the wealthy mind.
Yeah.
Always being open and always being receptive to growing, no matter what stage you're at.
Right.
Because I also find that whenever I close myself off and I think like, oh, you know, I know it all. Mm-hmm. I stay stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I never grow. Because if you're wanting to grow, you got to open yourself up, right? And I think part of opening yourself up, like you mentioned, is like humbling yourself and kind of like even being vulnerable to, hey, I don't know this. Why would I like spend this much time figuring it out when I can hire an expert who's already done this to help me figure out my blind spots.
You know, one interesting thing that I've also realized is for the longest time, as my business was growing, I also closed off myself, not just to mentors, but to relationships.
Mm.
Like when we first met, we were just like, you know, colleagues of the same group,
yeah.
You know? And then when I started kind of like, you know, when we started doing the monthly thing at my place and all that stuff, and then we started like hanging out more often, conversations would happen.
Yeah.
And literally I would sit and have dinner for 2 hours and someone would say a phrase, like 5 words. And those 5 words would like change the trajectory of my life and business over the following quarter, right? And so oftentimes like people talk about how, well, I'm an introvert. I just don't like having conversations with people or whatever. And yeah. It's like, you know, we had a mindset coach that works with our students, and she's like, you do realize there's no such thing. Like people, you know, some of our students would be asking our questions, like, you do realize there's no such thing, right? Like,
that's
all
what,
these
an
things.
Introvert?
Introvert. Mm. There's no introvert. There's no extrovert. There's no procrastinator. There's no, I lack focus. All these things, like when you were born, you weren't born with all these things.
Yeah, yeah.
You were born a pure child with nothing.
Yeah.
And then over time, as time went on, as society, as you became exposed to certain things, you started labeling yourself certain things.
Mm.
And then you started seeing like, oh, okay, the person that acts kind of like me is labeled this thing. You know, like sometimes I still don't know if I'm an extrovert or I'm an introvert. And he'd be like, wait, you're on podcast. You're definitely an extrovert.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I'm like, no, but I sometimes avoid being like in public places. But other times I'm like, dude, I love being in public places. And I love talking.
Yeah.
Like when I spoke at Sam Oven's thing.
Yeah,
I was nervous as shit.
Yeah.
This was the first time I ever spoken in front of people, and I was nervous.
Yeah.
And I've gotten so many people asking me to speak on stage, and I always make up some bullshit excuse. But it's really because I'm like, I don't know if I could do it.
Right.
It's a mindset block. So it's like, well, does that mean because I'm an extrovert? No, it doesn't mean anything. There is the whole thing. Recently I learned a concept of visionaries and integrators. And then usually visionaries are the ones that are out there. That are like, you know, in the spotlight. Integrators are the ones behind the curtains kind of making things happen.
Mm.
But then I've seen visionaries that have the mindset and have the, you know, but that are not very good at like creating new relationships. Integrators are the ones on stage and speaking to people and creating relationships. It's got nothing to do with labels or whatever. It's whatever you, all these things are things that you put on yourself, you know? And then what happens is when you start believing them, you become those things.
Right.
Right?
That's like an identity you form.
100%.
Yeah.
And then the identity that you form defines who you are, and then that's it. Now you're stuck with it. So that's why it's really important for us to be very careful with the labels that we place on ourselves.
100%.
Because those, literally, a small label that you might not even think about, it's like, oh, well, yeah, I'm an introvert, or whatever it is.
Right.
Could be stopping you from so much opportunity that you're not even thinking about.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. And that's why, like, we focus so much on the identity and helping you consciously craft who it is you need to become. Because, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced this, but at different levels in your business, you've had to assume a different identity. It was 100%. Never static to one thing.
Right.
Like right now, maybe you're working more on leadership and leading a team and inspiring other people. But before, you maybe had to put on your ad hat, your ad master identity,
right.
Or your, you know, when you're making your course master identity, right? So I guess, like, did you ever, like, when you were, how can you see a difference in your identity from when you were 20 to running that restaurant business to right now when you have this multiple eight-figure business? Like, what do you think is the fundamental difference between those two identities?
As I mentioned earlier, it's about awareness. The more you become aware of everything, like I used to hear people talk, say all the time, I'm very self-aware. And that was a term I did not understand what it meant. And I recently became aware of what that meant. The more awareness you have, and not just of like what you're doing, what you're saying, just everything, all of your surroundings, the better, I guess, outcomes you could have in your life. And this is with everything, you know. I recently had to make a very tough decision in my business and simply had to let go a third of my company.
Damn.
You know, like a very
cathartic moment.
Yeah, and it was like something that the entire company depended on. It was a branch of the company that the entire company depended on. And for the long, like, this decision needed to be made about 4 months ago.
Mm.
The reason why it took me 4 months, because in my mind, I did not think that I can do it without that branch in the company or without the people in that branch in the company.
Right.
Right. And then all that needed to happen, and it was for the longest time, I was just like, dude, I can't. And then I was like putting up with it. Well, we'll fix it. We'll do this. We'll try that. We'll, you know, and then I was like trying to take the punches and then just be, it's okay, you know, we'll make it work.
Yeah.
And literally it happened over a weekend that I made a mindset shift and I made an identity shift pretty much, where I went from, I got here because of this,
yeah,
to I got here because of me. I built this. I can build something else. Cut. Move on.
Hmm.
I woke up the next morning feeling like a mountain was lifted off my shoulders. Right? And it all started from within. And this is where one of the reasons why I love Tony Robbins and his teachings, because the thing that he always talks about is that the reason why we start business, the reason why we get into a relationship, the reason why we have sex, the reason why we have children, the reason why we go on vacations, the reason why we do anything in our lives, it's because we want joy. We want happiness. We want fulfillment,
mm,
right? But oftentimes we're looking for things out there to bring this joy to us.
Mm.
You know, we want a bigger house, a nicer car, more vacations. We want a prettier partner. We want this, you know, more behaved children, whatever.
Yeah.
But really the fulfillment and happiness always comes from within.
Right.
And if you're able to find that in every single situation, you can accomplish anything that you want in your life. Right?
100%.
And this is the one like mindset shift that I literally had within the last 6 months, because I was also always looking for like external things. And I was like very proud in that I'm the type of person that's very humble. I don't like to spend things on luxuries. I don't like to buy expensive stuff. I'm very like, you know, I'm very, very simple, mm, you know, but still, I was still putting expectations on certain things. And if these things don't perform, behave, or show up that way, then I would be miserable.
Mm.
And then that
your happiness was reliant
on other on people something or going, something else,
right?
Going based on my version of perfection,
right?
You know,
right?
But then when you stop and say, okay, well, this is my version of perfection, but what is that person's or that thing's version of perfection?
Yeah.
To them, that's perfect,
right?
So how can I live? How can I coexist with that thing the way it is, and still find fulfillment within myself, right?
Yeah.
And when you're able to do that, life, you kind of have a different perspective on life. Like life kind of changes colors, like kind of like a new filter that you've never seen before. It's
right.
Pretty cool, actually.
Dude, this is such a great topic and we could go on forever. But before I do, I want to fill up the gap between restaurant 20-year-old Bashar and starting up your own education company, starting up your own Amazon FBA business, Bashar. So
yeah.
What actually, how did your restaurant business actually unfold? And what happened to it? Why did you leave it? Why did you decide to start something else?
Well, I didn't leave it. I mean, I got kicked out. So 6 months in, I realized that I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
And this was, it broke out for me in terms of, in a way of, I was driving to my restaurant from my house, which was about 10 minutes away from my restaurant. I got a call from Trish. Trish said, "Hey, Bashar, the bank just called. They said the check bounced." I'm like, "Check bounced? What do you mean check bounced? There's plenty of money in the bank. There's definitely not that. Well, is there something wrong with your... Was your name not spelled correctly?" She's like, "No, they said it's insufficient funds." I'm like, "Okay, there's got to be a problem here. I'll call you back." I got to the restaurant. I don't know if I had mobile banking or I logged in somewhere. Anyways, I went to my bank and I was negative. And then I started looking over and it's like, well, how could you not know how much money there is in the bank? You know, like what business owner doesn't know? It's like, well, yeah, that tells you how much skill I had, you know, being a business owner. So that's when I realized that, holy shit, I don't have money in the bank. I still had not remodeled my restaurant. I bought it and it was a rundown place.
Yeah.
I needed to remodel it still. In my mind, I was thinking it's going to cost $50K. I don't have nothing in the bank. How am I going to do that? Because this place, the way it is, it's not going to get me to where I want it to go. Because again, I bought it as a rundown place. About a couple of weeks later, I was on a call with, what was his name? John the contractor. So John, if you're watching this, screw you, because you screwed me. But John,
I'll forgot make sure John name. Watches this.
I forgot his name. I would have shouted out his name, but his last name, I mean, but I forgot his last name. So I got a call. It was 10 o'clock at night after we closed, and we were going to go over our budget for our construction. And I was expecting $50,000. So after about 30 minutes of him taking me through the budget, it was $235,000
to remodel the
place. And with all you know, with credit to him, it needed that much.
Right.
In my mind, I think
that was
50,
really
000.
Run down.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dude. I mean, the bathrooms. You walk in, there's a toilet, there's no stall. There's like holes in the wall and stuff like that. It was like a really bad place.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude.
It was like a biker's bar. You know, it was like really bad.
Then it's all right, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's when I truly realized that holy shit, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyways, fast forward, we remodeled the place.
So you forked over $230,000?
No. I picked up a hammer. That's what happened.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. So I created a crew. My brother and my cousin, and then two of our cooks, every night. So for about 3 weeks, what we would do, 3 to 4 weeks, what we would do is we would close the restaurant, remodel overnight.
Mm.
I would send everyone home, and then we would open. Three times per week, I went two shifts with an overnight remodel. So two nights per week, two, three times per week, I would work 48 hours, no sleep, at the restaurant. So I'd go open, close, remodel, clean, open, close, go home and sleep.
Dude, that's crazy.
Right.
You're no stranger to hard work.
No. And for the whole 3 years that I had the place, I was working about 120 hours a week.
That's
like
insane.
This was like normal. I was working between 16 to 19 hours every single day. And so I learned how to lay tile, I learned how to frame walls, I learned how to set, you know, slabs of concrete. I learned everything. My best friend was YouTube, and my cousin, because he worked in construction. And we just made it happen.
Right.
We needed like a bunch of permits and stuff like that. I'm just like, screw that. Put cover the windows, remodel overnight. No one's gonna know what's going on when we wake up. No one's gonna know what happened. And we made it happen. It cost less than $50,000 actually, but we made it happen. So even after the remodel, I still remember the first day of our remodel. We had 2,700 people come through the door. Because that place was so run down for the longest time that the town, it was like a small town, everyone knew everyone. The town was so excited that something new was going to come up. And honestly, we did a great job.
Mm.
It was like one of those like rustic places where you could tell that it's very rough.
Yeah.
And like kind of like your cousin and brother put it together. But you could feel the love, you know? It was like literally we would take, you know, these fence planks.
Yeah.
We took fence planks from our walls in the back. And we put them on the bars, and we painted them, and like did like all these cool designs. We created benches from them. We did all this cool stuff that was like very like scrappy, but it was so cool. We gave it this like awesome feel, and until today, I still think the concept in my mind is probably awesome. So it was a country town. There was a rodeo right across the street
in San Diego.
It was East San Diego. I wanted to do is I wanted to bring country and give it also a futuristic theme. So I wanted to bring like old and the new together.
Yeah.
And and I came up with the name The Bucking DeLorean. So let me explain. We had the second mechanical bull in San Diego County. So we had a mechanical bull.
There was a mechanical bull inside your
Not inside, it was outside.
Okay.
Yeah. So in my mind, what I wanted to do, because I wanted to bring back the old, like the Western and stuff like that, and I wanted something in the future, I was like, oh shit, Back to the Future. The movie.
The DeLorean.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Bucking DeLorean,
yeah.
What we were going to do is we created the frame of the DeLorean that we were going to put on the back of the bull.
Stop. Right?
But then we ended up putting it in the bar. And it was super sick. So you'd come and you sit at the bar and there's a back of the DeLorean sticking out of the bar. It was sick and had like, you know, like fog and stuff like that. And like the back lights would like turn on and stuff like that. I had this like crackhead electrician that I found down the street that came and like would put it together for me. But dude, I'm telling you, it was so creative. It got put together so awesome.
Yeah.
But I had zero knowledge in operations.
Got it.
Zero.
Okay.
My mind was walls, you know, cool stuff and all that
shiny
stuff.
Objects.
Shiny object stuff. Right. But you would come and order a burger at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it would take an hour.
Damn.
And your break is an hour. I need to get back to work. You know? I sucked at operations. I sucked at the day-to-day stuff. I didn't know that. And because I was a visionary, I needed an integrator.
Right.
If I had found a partner, if I didn't have an ego, like now looking back at it, what I really should have done is I should have partnered up with someone that knew restaurants, that knew how to run restaurants. Mm-hmm. With my crazy ideas, we would have made it a success.
Mm.
Right? But again, too big of an ego. Fast forward, April 28th, 2015, was 5 p.m., was a Tuesday or Wednesday. I left to go pick up my girlfriend, who's now my wife, 5 p.m., so no one can say you burnt it overnight and stuff like that. I got a call from John. Hey, boss, the kitchen is on fire. I'm like, all right, well, put it out. How bad could it be? It's like, no, you don't understand. We're all outside. The fire department is here. So I texted my girlfriend, like, hey, can't make it. Drove back. Smoke out of the roof, like 5-6 fire engines outside. Trying to run inside. No one is letting me go in. And they're like, dude, the restaurant caught on fire.
So that's insane. Fucking
caught on fire. This is 5 p.m. during business hours.
Yeah.
There was literally a full bar, full, like, there was people in the kitchen. And we had old pizza ovens. There was a gas leak, caught on fire, caught up with the boxes and stuff like that, and then just took off, and then they just couldn't stop it. And the whole kitchen went. 4 months prior to that, I had stopped paying insurance.
No.
Yeah, so because you have first it was a historic building.
Okay.
Second, you have a bar, and we had, it was a big place. It used to hold like 250 people. So your insurance goes up, and then you need like this $2 million policy, this thing, this, that. I was paying like $1,250 a month. And I was paying it for like 2.5 years, and I'm like, dude, I'm paying all this money. I could, like, and I had like debt piling up everywhere, and I'm like, well, I can pay this guy, I can pay that guy. I'm like, what the hell is the worst going to happen?
Right.
4 months later, the kitchen caught on fire.
Of course it did.
You know, if it didn't, dude, I would have made out so freaking big, because I would have remodeled the whole place. I would have probably gotten so much money from insurance, you know, and I would have like really taken care of stuff. But my landlord, who now I was like 3-4 months late on rent, he just had it. He's like, all right, fuck it, this is it. And just like, get the fuck out of here. And it sued me for the remaining of the lease, because it was a 5-year lease. We had like 2.5, almost 3 years, into 2.5 years. And there was another 2.5 left. Was, I think, 3 or 5,000 a month, something like that. So that times whatever, 36 months. He sued me for all that. I owed the IRS like $42,000 for like back taxes, outside of like debt here and there, like credit cards. I had 2 repos. 2 cars got repoed under my name because I couldn't pay those. Like,
dude,
a few months prior
to
that.
How did you sleep at night?
I didn't. I honestly used to think that sometimes I would go to sleep and not wake up the next morning, because I would literally be so stressed out all day. I would have like my eyes would be twitching all day.
Dude, at that point I would be praying I didn't wake up the next morning.
Yeah, I would have headaches.
That's
all
insane.
Day. Yeah, like, so my employees never got paid on time for the longest time.
Yeah.
I had about 3/4 of our food purveyors wouldn't deliver food or alcohol to us. I would like go into like Devon's and stuff, buying alcohol, because I couldn't get from the companies anymore, because I had so much racked up debt and I just couldn't pay.
Right.
I would like go shopping from like stores and shit, because again, I couldn't buy from funny thing. I used to go to Smart and Final, and Smart and Final was the only place that even if your debit card is like, they will let your debit card go over.
Overdraft.
So what I would do is every Friday after 5 p.m., I would go to Smart and Final, empty out my business debit card, and I would go shop for the whole weekend and would rack up like $1,000, $2,000. But then by Monday, I would have all the deposits coming from the weekend and would clear it. But at least I would have enough food and liquor and stuff like that for the weekend to supply the restaurant.
Right.
It was something that I did every weekend. That's, literally every weekend, you know?
You were literally just shopping for inventory yourself.
Oh, yeah. Everything. 100%. I was literally running around all day shopping for inventory from all these different places.
Yeah.
Because, again, the companies where I'm supposed to be buying stuff from, I just couldn't anymore.
Too much debt with them. Yeah.
And so this was the restaurant story. And then from there, 6 months after, I got into depression. I don't think I was 100% like depressed, but I was like clinically you could say I was depressed. And then my cure of choice was Hennessy on the rocks. So I did that for about 6 months. I got a DUI. Luckily, I got it the way I did, because there were times where I would wake up in the morning and be like, how the fuck did I get home? So, but the way I got it, I wasn't that drunk. I was driving my buddy's car, so his car got impounded and had to, you know, bring it out. My girlfriend, again, was the one that saved me that time.
Yeah. Good thing for girlfriends, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And then this was rock bottom, man. This was 2015, about July, August 2015. And then after that, I saw a friend that I hadn't seen for a couple of years. And he's like, what have you been up to, man? I had a beard down to here. He's like, what have you been up to? I'm like, shit, a lot. What about you? He's like, I work from home. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? He's like, I work from home. I'm like, what do you do? What do you mean you work from home? What does that even mean? Like, I didn't understand what that meant.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, you know, there's this thing called YouTube. Like, and there's a bunch of stuff you could do from home. And I was like, no shit. Okay. So I remember one day I went home and opened my Toshiba laptop. I was like, all right, man, you're supposed to make me money. Show me how. And then just started searching all kinds of shit. And that's when I came across Amazon FBA. And this was late 2015.
Damn. So what happened up until that point with all the debt, all the back taxes that you owed the IRS and everything?
Nothing.
So you were still in that position?
No. Right now?
No, not right now. Oh, yeah, but like then, in 2015.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. This would take about 3 other years to actually clear everything. Dude, until about a year ago is when I got my first credit card. I literally had like multiple 7 figures in the bank, and the bank wouldn't even give me a credit card because my credit score was so shit. And because you know how like things stay on your credit for 7 years or something like that?
Oh, that sucks.
Well, I had two repossessed cars. I had like charged off credit cards. Although I had paid them off, they still like they dinged my credit. So literally up until about a year ago is when I got my first credit card after like almost a decade.
Dude, how did you get like, I don't know, how did you lease a car?
When I got married, she came with a car. so that was that. Yes. And then, yeah. And then, you know, we drove a Honda Accord for like a couple of years when we first got married. And then after that, we got
you had a Bentley or a Rolls Royce.
A Bentley. So I bought that cash.
Okay.
Yeah, because I couldn't finance. But dude, that's a whole nother story. Why that even was a thing. And then we got another car that we leased under her name.
Okay.
And then now our car I leased. So, I mean, that was a different story.
Okay. So 2015, you basically get into the world of online businesses. At that point, like, how do you go from that Amazon FBA to starting up your own coaching business?
So December 2015, I had found out about this thing called arbitrage, where you can buy stuff at a store and then sell them on Amazon for a profit. So it was Christmas. It was Christmas season. And again, my girlfriend came for the rescue. So what we would do is we would take her mom's SUV and we would drive around San Diego. I found this toy that I could buy for like $20-something, sell it on Amazon for $42. Now, I didn't profit $20-$30. I profited about $12-$14 after fees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I still remember the first day I woke up. And I opened my app, and there was a sale for $42.99. And I was like, holy shit.
This works.
I made money while I slept. To me, that was a concept that I couldn't understand.
Yeah.
Because, like, I know now it's like, oh, yeah, you know. Like, you know, don't even think about it. But it's like, dude, to be able to make money as you sleep, while you sleep, it's stupid. It's literally stupid.
Yeah.
You know? Because for me, it's like I had to shop for the food, store it, clean it, prep it.
That's a whole new world.
Clean after the customer to make a $10 sale on a sandwich and a beer. But now I'm making a $10 profit in my sleep. Like, my mind was blown. I was like, all right, if I could do it once a day, how could I do it 5 times a day? How can I make sure I may do it every day? Okay, once I did that, it's like, all right, how do I do that with multiple products? How do I do that now? You know, and then I started just doing the math, and I was like, holy shit. But then what happened was that concept became very not scalable because I was driving around stores all day long. And then there was one toy that after December, people weren't buying it as much. And I was like, well, holy shit. It took me like I don't know, maybe like 2 months to find that toy. And it's like, well, shit, every 2 months I'll find one product and it'll sell for a month and then I don't have unlimited supplies. It's like, and I started going to, and then I found out about Alibaba and I found out they, I can talk to manufacturers. I'm like, hey man, can you manufacture the same exact toy for me? It's like, yeah. So I got the sample and then I showed it to my wife and she's like, well, girlfriend at the time. And then her cousin or someone was like, hey man, you can't do that. I'm like, fuck you mean you can't do that? It's like, well, you can get sued. I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you're selling someone else's product because I manufactured it the same. Like, was it fake one?
Oh, they just literally copied
it? They copied the whole thing. Oh my God. I wasn't thinking that way, you know? And I was all right, well, fuck. I guess I got to go to the manufacturer, like to the actual company. And I could not get to them. I tried to go to distributors and stuff like that, and I just couldn't get them. I'm like, all right, there's got to be an easier way. I'm like, wait, I'm talking to the manufacturers. There's got to be something I can do with them I can sell on Amazon. And then I found out about this whole other thing called private label.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. I know how to get to manufacturers. If I just know what kind of product to sell, they'll make it. And then I'll have unlimited supplies. Holy shit. I don't have to drive around. I can just go to them. You know, they buy it. They ship it directly to Amazon, Amazon stores. I was like, oh my God. Like, dude, when I when that thing became real to me,
yeah,
that's when I was like, holy shit. Because again, see, I come from a different world. So comparing this experience, like now, kids nowadays look at this and then they're bitching about it. Oh, well, it's taking a month to get to Amazon. Well, Amazon takes 5 days to unpack everything. I'm like, dude, are you fucking serious right now?
You make money while you fucking sleep.
Do you know what I used to go through to make sales? Like, dude, I was, first of all, I was limited.
Yeah.
I would be crazy to see a customer walk in before 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, or someone stay for more than an hour and have more than 3 beers. Like, are you insane right now? And so I come from a completely different world. So when I saw this, dude, I was mind blown, you know? And then about 2 years after that, I just kind of went into my cave and just focused on that. Like, I blocked all of my best friends, literally blocked them.
Why?
Well, one of them because I had borrowed money from and I just couldn't pay him anymore. I just couldn't pay him. And I was like, hey, man, you just got to give me some time. And then he kept on like being like more persistent. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm just going to block you right now. And then they would hit me up to go out and stuff like that. And I'm like, blocked. Dude, I'm not about that. You know, I blocked all my cousins. I changed my number at the time. I blocked everyone.
So you literally became a different person.
I became a different person because I just literally had to focus on me. I had to focus on me. And then prior to that also, I started, so right after the restaurant, I was getting threatened by my employees for like 2 weeks because they would literally text me like, if I see you, I'll beat your ass because they weren't getting paid. I didn't, and it wasn't because I didn't want to. I didn't have money in the bank to pay them.
Right.
And I was like, guys, like, this is my bank account. And I think to them, they just couldn't understand, like, what the fuck you're talking about? You've got all this business. You have no money in the bank. Like, they didn't understand what was going on, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, I got to figure something out here. I started working at Hilton Hotels as a dishwasher. And then I started driving for Uber. And then once I found out about Amazon, I would literally have my laptop next to my seat. And in between Uber, as I'm like waiting for the next ride, I would pull it up, hook up my hotspot and like start looking for a product. So like talk to suppliers or whatever.
Yeah.
And I did that for like 6-7 months until I dropped my dishwashing job, stayed with Uber. I did Uber for like almost a good year or so. Honestly, Uber was like one of those things. Like I used to think even if I make $10,000 a month, I won't give up Uber. I was making about $3,500 a month, but it was an awesome thing. Because right. I could do it on my own terms. I was making such cool... I was the kind of Uber driver that will not shut up until you... Like, literally, I would either have people, like, put on their headphones or just be like, hey, bro, I just need to get to my place, please. Can you, like, turn up the radio or something? I would literally, like, just talk to them.
Yeah.
And I would, like, you know, get their numbers. What do you do for a living? Blah, blah, blah. It's like
just building... Networking.
Building networks. I didn't know why. I just knew that it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I think also it was a way for me to, like... get distracted from my misery pretty much, you know, like, so I don't have to sit in my mind and think about the shit. Mm. And then from there, a couple of years after, man, after I came out of my cave, you know, a few friends were like, where the hell have you been? What the hell have you been up to? This. And at the time I was probably making, I don't know. I know I was making probably about like good 15, 20K a month in like profits, profits. Now with Amazon, you're not actually taking that home into your bank account.
Wait, how long ago was this? Like after
you
started?
So this was late 2018. So this was about 3 years into the entire thing.
Oh, 3 years into Amazon FBA?
Into Amazon FBA.
You're making 15K a month in profit?
Yeah. So my business was probably making anywhere between $60,000 to $80,000 a month in sales, and I was profiting about, you know, 15-20K. And that's when like people, like when I would tell my friends, because everyone that I told thought I was lying. Because they're like
dealing drugs.
They're like, wait,
you're
a second.
You're a drug dealer or something.
What are you talking about making 15? Like, they didn't understand that, you know, because all my friends worked at like gas stations, liquor stores, car washes, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They're making $3,000-$4,000 a month if they're lucky. $5,000, it's like, holy shit, I'm like making it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm here telling them how I'm like working from home on my laptop all day, making $15,000 a month. They're like, what the fuck are you talking
about? So you
about?
Just, at that point, you just quit Uber and everything else, right?
Yeah. Well, at that point, it was just stupid to continue that. I just did that for like good year. About 2017 is when I quit everything and just kind of focused on Amazon.
Okay. So here's a question for you. What was the biggest mindset shift from your 20s to like in 2018 when you're making some real money, you know, and you started making 15K a month and 20K a month in profit from the Amazon FBA business? What shift allowed that to happen for you?
Scarcity. It was holy shit, I'm in debt. I've met someone that I care about that I feel like is the one, but I'm no financial position right now to provide the kind of life that I want. My father is disappointed and I need to gain his respect back and I need to make up the loss, you know? I was still living with parents. I started picking up some payments, so that kind of eased my relationship with my dad a little bit. I started paying for rent, started paying for this, started paying for that.
So it kind of woke you up.
It did.
That was an increase in awareness, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
It stunned you into awareness. It was, holy shit, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
It was. And the biggest shift was being clear on my why. So I get this question all the time is, I want to start a business. What's your first tip? And people are like looking for me to give them a tactical tip.
Right.
And I'm like, be clear on your why.
Yes.
And then they look at me like, get the fuck out of here. I'm out of here. You know? And so when I tell people to be clear on their why, I didn't even know that until years later.
Right.
Now when I look back, it's like, yeah, I had a clear why. I knew exactly what I want. I knew the outcome. The outcome wasn't $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a month. The outcome was respect back from dad, take care of family, be able to get married, clear debt. Very clear. That's what I was focused on. That's it. Amazon was a vehicle. It could have been something else. Could have been drug dealing. Could have been whatever. I could have become a prostitute. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I did.
I'm so glad you're not.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
With the stash,
with
it
the
work.
Stash, it would work. Yeah, it doesn't matter what I would have done. It was just, this is the outcome that I want.
Yeah.
So I became very clear on my why, because there would be days where I would wake up and my freaking listing got suspended. Or my entire account got frozen. Or my supplier told me to go fuck off. Or shipping, you know, went from $2 a unit to $5 a unit, and all my profit went.
Right.
You know, or money got stuck at Amazon. Or, you know, or just someone just would throw a wrench in my face and, like, get a lawsuit in the mail out of nowhere from something that I did 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Or some shit like that. It's like, where the fuck did this come from right now, you know?
Yeah.
And all these things. And so turbulences will happen all the time, whether you like it or not, you know? If you are clear on your why, though, that's going to be the thing that's going to pull you in the future, right? So that's very important that you become clear on your why. So for me, the mindset shift was I became clear on my why. I didn't know it then, but now looking back. And so this is why every time now I want to do something, I become clear on the why, on the outcome. You know?
Right.
What is it?
Right.
And usually you don't want it to be attached to you and to your personal benefit. You want it to be attached to something bigger than you. And this is why now with BJK University, I have so much drive that it's like Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever the hell is going on, it's just another day in the office for me. And I love it.
Right.
You know, I wake up, I do my morning routine, I do my exercise, I go to work, and then I just love it, you know? And I'm able to drive others in the same way. That regardless what is happening in their lives, they can still come and show up and do the work and love it and enjoy it because of my vision and because of my drive for them as well.
Interesting. It's so interesting you say that, because the first thing we do when we work with our clients, and that's something I realize, is you have to have clarity. And clarity is not just intellectual clarity, like I want to make 15K a month. It's also emotional clarity.
Yeah.
Knowing why do you want to make 15K a month?
Yep.
What is it, that thing that's bigger than you? Like, and also it's, I also realize like when you give, it's much better than just receiving, right? So it's got to be much larger than yourself, like a mission that moves you every single day. Kind of like Elon Musk and his desire to have a colony in Mars.
Yep.
You know, that's his one metric that he uses. Like, what do you want? Mars. Is this decision going to help me move one step closer to Mars? Free economy? Like, yes, do it. No, eliminate it.
Right.
That's just one metric of judgment. So it's very interesting that you say clarity and knowing your why was that main shift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So 2018, Amazon FBA. How'd you get into coaching?
So again, when I came out of my cave for about a good 6 months there, you know, you don't know you're doing good until people tell you.
Yeah.
And then when people keep telling you that you're doing good, then you believe it.
Mm.
And then when you believe it, that's when you get in problem, you get in trouble. And this is why for me, you know, we're on a mission to impact 1 million lives. And right now our mission is to fix people's financial problems so that we can allow them the space to think about their passion. You know, people talk a lot about, like, you hear Gary Vee. If you figure out your passion, you'll never work a day in your life. I'm like, go fuck yourself, dude. If I'm in debt and I've got debt collectors calling me, like, how am I going to think of my passion? Now, look, if I picked up a paintbrush when I was 2 or if I picked up a soccer ball when I was 5, then that's different. I've got a skill. I was born with it. But I don't have any of those, you know?
Right.
I mean, look at me, right? I ain't got nothing, you know? So it's like, I ain't got no passion. I was in debt. To find your passion, you've got to come from a place of abundance. You can't come from a place of scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are struggling to make ends meet, trust me, you're not thinking about your passion. You're thinking of how to put money, you know, food on the table.
Yep.
Right? How to make sure that the you know, you don't have too much month at the end of the month and that you've got enough money to feed your family, right?
Right.
So I was in a place of scarcity. And oftentimes that's good. When your back is against the wall, that's good. But then you get to a certain level, that's when you need to make a shift. Because you're not, like, here's an example. One of our pod leaders, we had a problem. Here's his problem. Our sales reps are making too much money, bro. I can't get them to do follow-ups anymore. I'm like, interesting. It's like, that's an interesting problem to have,
yeah.
You know? I'm like, okay. He's like, I am the kind of guy that wakes up every day thinking that I'm, because he was homeless at some point in his life when he had a wife and a child. And he's like, I wake up every day thinking that I'm going to go there. So that's my drive. I'm like, okay, how much did you make last month? Like, it was like 25K or something like that. I'm like, how long do you think this is going to last? Because there's going to get to a point where it's like, you've got multiple six figures in the bank. Like, you know, you're not going to become homeless tomorrow. You know, like, it's like, even if you lost your job tomorrow, you know, you probably have a couple years of leeway to, like, figure the next thing out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when the mindset needs to shift from, holy shit, I'm going to go. But like right now, I know I have enough to last me about 15 years if I do nothing.
Mm.
Literally, if I earn zero income, as long as I keep my expenses the way they are,
yeah.
I have enough to last me 15 years in the bank, right? Now, obviously, I don't want to wait 15 years before I figure out the next thing,
right,
you know?
Right.
But
what, like your business too, like everything?
If my business shut, if I decide to shut down all my businesses and I have zero money coming in,
right?
As long as I keep my personal expenses at the same level,
okay,
I have 15 years in the bank.
Gotcha.
Right. So when I was talking to him and when I was thinking about where I was, I got to a point where everyone was like, "Dude, you're making 15 grand a month! Like, holy shit!" And my mom was like, "Oh my god, I'm so proud of you, this guy," you know. And then my wife was like, "Oh well, look at your, you know, like." You're making so much more than everyone around you and stuff like that. And I started believing it.
Ego.
And then before I know it, I'm at the beach drinking every day for 4 or 5 hours.
Mm.
And then before I know it, I'm kicking up my feet and then I'm resting on my laurels. Before I know it, I've made it at 28 years old. Like, holy shit, that's an accomplishment. I'm thinking, dude, I'm about to get on, like, you know, Forbes 30 under 30 and all this crap.
Bentley.
And like, hell yeah. You know what I mean?
Here comes the Bentley.
And that's where the Bentley comes in, right? So that's when I realized that I've made it in life.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what it was. It was like a punch in the gut. A couple things happened at the same time. One of them, not being able to lease a car. And then that's when I went and kind of like went, what's the word? Like pissed off shopping, I guess, and went and bought a Bentley cash. And then I think I was trying to open a credit card or something. I was trying to do something and then I couldn't do it. I was like, well, what the fuck? Then all this is for nothing. Like, all this money that I'm making, they don't even give a shit about it, blah, 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 you know? Around that same time, I had been helping a couple of friends of friends, and I got a message from this guy that I was helping. A few people I was helping for free, a few people I was helping just like, you know, maybe getting like $100 a session or something like that, just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, hey, bro, I made 36 grand in the last 6 months in profits. And that felt really good. But then what felt more, after I got off the phone with him, he was 23-year-old from North Carolina. His whole goal was that I want to ride my dirt bike around the country and then get into tournaments. Up until then, his thing was, I barely make ends meet. I don't have money. You know, if I travel, I'm not making any more money. Like, what am I going to do?
Right.
And this allowed him to do that. And this is when I was like, Amazon is probably not people's passion because it wasn't mine, but it can help people find their passion.
Mm.
Right? So it's a vehicle. You solve your money problem so that you have time and you have, you know, attention to go find your passion or focus on your passion. And that's when I realized that I have a skill and that I'm obligated to share it with the world, right? And then from there, it just became a thing, man. And I just became obsessed over seeing the transformation. Like right now, it's kind of like I'm addicted to it. You know?
Right, right, right.
Like if I don't see like a big wow like per week, it's like I start digging for it, you know? Like I'm like used to like just seeing them fly by, you know, like from the team or from the community or whatever. We have so many people in both areas. If like a week goes by and I don't have like a big like holy shit, like not like, oh, I made $10,000 a month or something like that, but more like...
It's pretty holy shit.
It is, but it's like, but that's, again, that's the other thing. It's like you get numb to it.
Right,
you
know? Right.
And, but now it's like, you know, I was able to buy my mom a car or I put a down payment on this or, you know what I mean? Like big things.
Right.
Or like, you know, I quit my job. Like this is the biggest one for me.
Hmm.
Being able to quit their job, you know, with their team or community. I start like looking for it. It's like fuel that I need to kind of keep going, you know? But again, I've been on this mission for 3 years now. And I am more fired up today than I ever was in my life because it's not even about me anymore.
Mm.
It's not even about my team anymore.
Mm.
It's about a greater good. It's about a bigger thing than all of us put together. And it's about making that big impact. And again, for me, it's I want to start with people's money problems first. But then my vision, my five-year vision is I want to tackle other areas of their lives. Because I feel like when you start making money is really when the real problems start happening. Not when you don't have money.
That's when you start to realize, holy shit.
Yeah, holy shit, I have money. Ego starts showing up and you start getting in real trouble.
Mm. That's amazing, dude. Mm. That's crazy. So, 2018-19-ish, you fully commit to starting up a coaching business?
Yeah, early 2019, yeah.
Okay, so 2019, startup coaching business, 2022, $2 million a month.
Yeah.
20K a month, 2018, $2 million a month, 2022. What were the big, like the biggest, what was the biggest mindset shift that allowed that to happen?
A couple things. It went from it's for me to it's for other people. Because for me, 20,000 is more than enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's for other people, $200 million a month is not enough. You know, because now it's about providing opportunity.
Mm.
So now what I've realized is that the bigger the company gets, the more people I can employ and provide them opportunity. Because I know that they have better opportunity with me than anything else they do in their lives. So I want to get as many people in my company as possible. And then in turn, we can provide more opportunities to people out there. Because I know that we have the best program out there that teaches people the specific skill.
Yeah.
And I would rather them get into our program than any other program. I would rather them get into our program than put that money in some other dumb shit, like go on a vacation or like spend it on a Gucci bag or something, you know, because that's an asset. That's a liability. This is an asset.
Right.
Right. So
you can sell a Gucci bag for an asset as an asset. Right?
Dude, it's not an asset. I made the dumbass mistake to buy my wife a Gucci bag in like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago for her birthday.
Yeah.
I think I spent like $2,700 until this day. I feel that.
Really?
Yeah. She wore it maybe like 5 times and it got scratched up and now it's just sitting in the closet. It was the dumbest thing that I've ever done in my life.
Interesting.
Literally.
Interesting. Yeah. It's funny you say that because my mom's birthday was in September. She's always wanted a Louis bag.
Really?
I just bought it for her.
Yeah.
I bought my
mom a Louis bag. She doesn't wear it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
My mom carries it everywhere.
Really? That's good.
So hey, I was very happy about that.
Hey, yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. But, so it became about, it's not about me, it's about other people.
Hmm.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, alone, you can go fast. Together, you will go further. So this is when I realized that I need people.
Hmm.
And I need great people.
Hmm.
You don't just need people, you need great people. And great people usually either have their own thing or are starting their own thing or are already in a great opportunity. To bring them into your own thing, you got to provide them with an incredible opportunity, number one, because people are opportunists, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Number two, you got to provide them with something that's bigger than you, bigger than them, bigger than everybody together. And once you have that vision created and that culture and that, like, that place that feels like home and that thing that drives them, Tony Robbins talks about the pull and the push. He talks about how motivation is something that pushes, that you need push. Mm. It's like you're waking up every day, you're watching a Tony Robbins video, and then that pumps you up.
Yep.
But then what happens when someone slaps you in the face? You fall. It's like you need another video to pump you up.
Mm.
But if you have something so large in the future that's just pulling you, doesn't matter if this guy smacks you, this, you know, train runs you over, whatever happens, you'll get up and it keeps pulling you, right?
There's nothing else I would rather commit my life to.
That's right.
It's pulling you.
It's just pulling you.
Yeah.
And so right now we have such a big purpose that's pulling all of us in the same direction that it's like it doesn't matter what happens today. So, you know, over the last 6 months, we've had pretty turbulent 6 months in business. But we're more excited today than we've ever been because
right.
we know where we're going to be in 5 years, because we know that it's bigger than all of us, that we know that, you know, this is just part of business. We're figuring it out as we go and we all believe in it. So that's the most important thing.
Yeah. It's like I always tell everyone and also my clients, everything can be taken from a man. It's like that Viktor Frankl quote.
Right.
I don't know if you heard of it. Everything can be taken from man except his attitude.
Right.
The last of his freedoms.
Yep.
So as long as you keep your attitude in the right place, you know, everything goes wrong around you, you're getting pulled by your purpose, getting clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, this goes back to that why.
Yep.
But your why is just getting bigger and bigger.
Yep.
And it's something even more exciting that you want to wake up and commit yourself to every day.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think the last thing I wanted to talk about, and you let me know if you're comfortable sharing this. I've seen you over the past 6-7 months. When I met you, you were this old-fashioned chugging monster. To now, you don't drink at all.
Mm.
And there was a significant life event that happened. And, you know, you're wearing right now all black and you keep your life very simple. Your home is very simple. So just in terms of your lifestyle as this eight-figure business owner, you know, how? I guess let's start with that event, that maybe cathartic event that happened to you.
Yeah.
If you don't mind sharing a little bit about
No,
that.
Absolutely, man. I share that every in every moment and every chance I get. So May 21st
yeah.
was around 1 p.m. was a Saturday. We're walking down Publix and I started feeling dizzy. I told my wife, I'm like, hey, I'm just not feeling good. It's something weird. It's like, oh, you're probably hungry. I still remember we were pushing a cart. We had a bag of carrots. She's like, here's a carrot. She just like literally shoves a carrot in my mouth. And then we're walking and then 2 seconds later, I'm like, babe. And then everything shuts down. I just feel my body getting tensed up right as everything shut down.
Mm.
The next thing is I open my eyes and I'm being put inside of an ambulance. And then I was told that I had a seizure. And I was like, seizure, okay. But I'm not there, you know. And then maybe like 30 minutes later, I woke up and I was in the hospital and then things hooked up in my body and stuff like that. So I had a seizure. First time in my life. Over the following 2-3 weeks, I would sleep 2 hours per day. I was stressed out all day.
Mm.
I've launched 9 businesses, 7 of which failed. I've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. I've gotten sued. I've been to jail. I've done all this stuff. Been to jail. That kind of sounds cool. You know, I've been to jail. None of this stuff put as much pressure on me as this.
Mm.
And I feel like now looking back at it, it's because when you're dealing with like business or whatever, it's a tangible thing. You can do something about it, right?
Right.
And especially if us, like we've been doing it for a while. With health, it's like I'm 155 pounds, about 5'9", 5'10", so I'm pretty thin. We have a chef that cooks for us a couple times a week.
Yeah.
I exercise 4 or 5 times a week. And I eat pretty healthy. So it's like, why did this happen now? If this happened 5 years ago and I was stressed out all the time, I'd be like, yeah, okay, this makes absolute sense.
Right, right.
If this happened now, and it's like, dude, I'm like more obsessed about what I do. I'm like, I'm the happiest that I've probably ever been. Why did this happen now? And then back in my mind, I've always felt like there was something wrong with me. Like I always had an underlying condition. And every time I would go and try to get checked for like blood or whatever, x-rays, always like, dude, there's nothing wrong with you. You know? And in my mind, it's like, holy shit, it's that thing. There's probably something wrong with me. And then my mind and all, and this is probably a whole other podcast by itself, but it all stems from a thought. And then that thought goes into another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thought goes into, after, you know, I learned this. And again, that's why
becomes
I'm saying
a belief,
over the last...
becomes a conviction.
Right. That's why over the last 6 months, absolutely. Over the last 6 months, dude, I've learned so much about this stuff. It's insane. But every thought creates an emotion that only lasts for 90 seconds. Unless another thought comes in that triggers another emotion, that thought will go away, that emotion goes away.
Hmm.
But then when you keep adding thoughts to it, after a few emotions, then your physiology reacts, right? And then when your physiology reacts, that's when you start feeling dizzy, you start shaking, your nervous system literally starts collapsing. And so for me, it started showing up in ways of panic attacks. And to me, I was thinking that I'm having other seizures. And so that started playing with me. And so for the next 2-3 weeks, I would literally live on the couch, like a dead vegetable. I would have a laptop on my lap. I would try to get into meetings, and I would have like panic attacks in between. I would like start feeling dizzy, like I'm about to faint.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't leave the house. If I left the house, I would have a panic attack, and we'd need to come back home. I literally could not do shit.
Mm.
I would have meditation in my ears, literally 24/7. I wouldn't be able to sleep. I wouldn't be able to do anything. And this went on for 3-4 weeks. And then I started working with one of our team was he's a hypnotist. And so he gave me an exercise. He literally hypnotized me and put me to sleep. And then I started using that exercise over the following week or so that actually helped me go to sleep. And then my wife was about to go. So I was actually in Quantum. And I was like, the virtual one before the in-person one. It's like, man, I wish this was in like 2 weeks from now. Why? Because my wife needed to go to Detroit for a wedding. And I was like, man, I wish that there was an event that I could attend that keeps me busy. I went to sleep. I dreamed that Tony Robbins had an event July 14th to July 17th. I wake up. I go to TonyRobbins.com, and there's Unleash the Power Within July 14th to July 17th. I don't know how the hell that happened. It was weird. That's put me on a self-development journey over the last 6 months that if my seizure didn't happen, I wouldn't be here. I can literally say that I am a completely different person than I was 6 months ago.
Mm.
I've never been through such a changing self-development journey in such a short amount of time in my life. The thoughts that I think, the way that my awareness, my behaviors, the person who I am, is. I'm not saying better, I'm just saying it's a completely different person than I was 6 months ago.
Mm.
And some of the perks is that I don't drink anymore, I don't smoke anymore, I gave up caffeine. So no more sodas, no coffee, no tea, no energy drinks. That morning I had a Monster and 2 teas. And so now if I have a Monster, I probably have a freaking panic attack. So I don't even do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's been an eye-opening journey. And the cool thing is these were two biggest crises in my life, the seizure and the restaurant burning down.
Mm.
And after every crisis that happened, I come out a completely different person.
Right.
So what this has done is it has built my resilience and my trust within myself like never before.
Mm.
Right now, I feel like I can go through anything. And I know that meanwhile, I will feel like shit. I won't want to wake up in the morning. But I have such confidence and conviction that with time, I will come out the other side because I've done it before. I've done it with financial situations. I've done it with health situations. And I feel like this could be my ego speaking. I don't know. But I feel like I have such like an amazing tool belt that I can pull things out of.
Right.
That'll help me throughout. But that's the thing. And I have a saying right now. There's a quote every month. I put a quote on my whiteboard that I live by for the month. And last month, 2 months ago, the quote was, "Thank you, life, for being difficult, because it is through difficulties that we learn and grow." And so now every time I see a crisis, I get excited.
Mm.
I'm like, holy shit. Can you imagine what's going to happen? Like, I'm about to get even better. Okay. All right. I love that. You know? It feels like shit in between, but I know on the other side, it's going to be completely different.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Tenets of the wealthy mind. Clarity on your why. Attitude. And attitude towards hardship. Embracing hardship and challenge.
Yes.
So I guess, you know, I think this is a great place to conclude this. If someone were watching this right now, they're in a circumstance in their lives where they feel trapped. They feel like they're not living their lives on their own terms. They don't know what their passion is. They're in that scarcity mode that you were at maybe back in the day. They're going through a lot of hardship. What advice would you give to them?
Two things. Number one, I would say be clear on your why. That's the thing that I tell everyone now. Be clear on your why. The more clear you are, the further you'll go, the faster you'll go, the better outcome you'll have. And number two, have trust in yourself. You've gone here. You've gone through. I don't care who you are. Even if you were born into billions, you've gone through some shit in your life. And you've gotten to this point. Trust that it's all in your mind. And that your potential and your level of awareness, it's what's keeping you from the next part. But it's 20% skill and 80% psychology.
Right.
And unfortunately, we focus a lot on skill and not a whole lot on psychology. And if you just take as much time, not even four times as much, as much time as you put into your skill building, into your psychology, you literally will become a completely different human in 30, 60, 90 days.
That's fantastic, man.
Appreciate you, sir.
Thank you so much for being on. It was an absolute pleasure having you on. I learned so much from you today, dude.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to apply what you've just taught me and change my life for the better. Like, you know, it's like you say, it's those five phrases or five words that you hear from someone and it just sticks with you.
Yeah.
So, 100%. Yeah, man. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for watching. I hope this was helpful. Bashar, I'm going to attach all of your socials in the description box below. Where's the best place someone can go to find out?
Yeah, Instagram. We're biggest on Instagram. Be sure it's the one that has the most followers because there's like a bunch of people trying to, you know, scam others and stuff like that. So add Bashar Jacob2 on Instagram. Follow us.
Till next time. Peace.
All right. Cool, man.
That was phenomenal, awesome. Bro. Yeah, that was a great first episode.
Yeah, man.
I love the storytelling. I hope the lighting was okay in here.